find the longest path.
Well, welcome to my fourth complexity class. Back by popular demand is Bill Gesarch. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Lance.
So, Bill, today you wanted to talk about surprising theorems.
That's right. A while back I did a posting on surprising theorems, and later on I guest posted it for you for a week. So actually a combination of surprising theorems and how it is to guest post. But first, it's kind of the same thing. Surprising theorems, I was surprised by the surprising theorems. I had originally thought that it would change over time, and that was true. I didn't know how much, because I talked to Richard Ladner and Harry Lewis, old-timers, and they had theorems, and you talked to Joel Seifers, they had theorems I had never heard of that were surprising at the time. And also they told me that median finding was surprising. We can't really internalize that. We can't really feel what it was like to know that, gee, median finding in linear time, wow! We can't really have that sense they had back then.
Yeah, it's that sense of wonder, right? The same way that young students today don't remember a time when non-deterministic space was not closed under complement.
Yeah, or a time when obviously IP was not P space.
Well, primes were not in P.
Anyway, so I liked the posting that I made. I got some flack because while I had asked some old people, older people, about things that were surprising, I didn't really ask newer folks. I mean, there are theorems coming out more recently that I should have included as well, maybe even the last 5 years or so. But it was more surprising as an exercise in sociology that how things really do change.
So do you think with young people, what's surprising to them isn't surprising to us because we've lived through more of it?
Well, in some cases, yes, because as if we're that old, yeah, young people, they may be dealing with concepts we haven't really dealt with that much, especially people outside our area. Like, a surprising result on, say, network flows wouldn't surprise you or me because we're not really up on network flows.
That's right. If you don't know what the big questions are, you can't.
Now, within complexity theory, I think especially you are up on enough things to be surprised, but again, also, it's harder to surprise us because we've been surprised before. You might say, the older you are, the harder it is to actually surprise you.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. That sort of thing.
Indeed. Hey, although I will say, I think of the recent results that surprised me. Also a distinction. For example, the recent result that, undirected graph connectivity is in log space. That was the result?
That's right, yeah. Reingold's right there.
That was surprising, but again, I am not surprised. I'm not sure I was surprised by the result so much as that it was true. I mean,
we all believed it to be true because we, in some sense, thought you could always de-randomize these randomized algorithms.
Yeah. We have a general sense that R.
Right. So it's more surprising that he came up with a proof than, in this case,
yeah,
than the theorem itself.
And also, another thing, the new generation, or people that are young now, even people that have been in the field 10 years, they don't recall a time when it was not the normal thing that randomization probably doesn't help. I still recall back in 86 at a conference, Mike Sipser gave a very nice talk where he thought R equal P. Most people at the time did not think so.
Yeah, no, back at, say, in the 80s, a lot of people thought randomness was extremely powerful as a technique for searching.
Yeah.
And now it seems, I mean, not only do we have only very few examples, but we have strong evidence that you can probably eliminate randomness in general.
Yeah. So that's more of a surprising concept. I mean, you could say that Nissan Wigman was surprising, and certainly it was, but I'm saying that whole line of research was surprising. And it's hard to know exactly where to credit. I credit NW, but one can maybe credit further along. Also, other things like the Blum speed-up theorem. I doubt your grad students know what it is.
Probably true for the most part.
Yeah. And is that a bad thing?
Yes and no. These things, I guess, are useful to be known, but there's only so much you can teach them.
Yeah, it's the old trouble of, in a more general sense, if you ask somebody, you know, ought students know NP completeness for undergraduates? Ought they know compiler design? Ought they know cryptography? Ought they know Blum speedup theorem? Almost everything gets a yes, but if you put all that into a curriculum, we'd have an 8-year major. So you can't learn it all. Anyway, yeah, but that's another thing, is that things that were surprising or also, surprising is one thing, things that were interesting 30 years ago, like the Blum speedup theorem, are less so now, but something's got to go, and I'm sorry, Manuel, but...
Manuel, about this at a conference recently, and about what happened with Blum complexity. Basically, what happened is, once NP completeness came out, people just stopped looking at Blum complexity measures. And asked Manuel about it. Manuel said, well, he basically said, yeah, Cook figured out the right questions to ask, and then, you know, I moved on to other things.
Yeah, that's true. Some, like Manuel can do that. It's very good of him, certainly. I kind of feel sorry for someone who proved a surprising, great breakthrough theorem and then later on couldn't move on with the times, which happens too.
It happens a bit too often.
Indeed. Okay. Also, looking at my list here again, matrix multiplication was surprising at the time. And I had been told it was surprising a while back. I still don't... Gee, all it is divide and conquer on trick. Gee, how hard is that?
Well, actually, I believe there was actually someone who come up with a paper before that, if I remember the story right, which had shown that in a certain model, you couldn't do better than cubic time for matrix multiplication. And then what Strassen basically said was, he looked at the model, he said, no, this doesn't make sense. This literally limits what we can do. And then came up with this new algorithm.
That's true. In fact, more generally, sometimes lower bounds are more statements about the model than about the result. Now, let me ask you this. Of my list, or of your experiences, why don't you just rattle off three theorems you find surprising?
From the list?
Or not.
Well, first of all, there's actually something that came after your list.
Which is
Nash equilibrium.
Gotcha.
The fact that two-player Nash equilibrium looks to be hard was a result from December, right, which is actually came after your list.
Actually, Lance, I'm glad at your age you still can be surprised. Okay, so name two more.
Honestly, I have to go with the hardness of the halting problem. I have to say, when I first saw that still shocks me today. That, you know, there are simple things we just can't compute.
That's the point. It's one thing to be surprised at the time. It's something to be surprised even 20 years later.
In this case, 50 years later, right?
Well, yeah, in this case. I was thinking about when you first learned it, probably.
I mean, one story, I mean, it relates to my own work research, was before the Lunford-Nikolov-Neeson results that the permanent had interactive proof came this paper by Noam Neeson that said the permanent had a multiple prover interactive proof.
Yeah.
And that result shocked me. And it shocked me so much that we went on to get the single prover case, you know, where Noam's paper was eventually merged in.
That's right. Some things that are surprising never quite get the literature in that form. They get subsumed with other things. Yeah, okay, let me tell you what surprised me the most on the list, and it was also the most controversial. Yeah, in that I passed lists around to various people before I posted it.
Right.
And one result seems to really have everyone have different sides on it. I have a personal affinity for it. The vertex cover with 6 size k can be done in n cubed time that is not a function of k, or lately it's actually like k times n cubed time, whatever. Now it's down to something like n plus k to the k time. But the notion that, you know, think about it. If you're a student in a class taking algorithms course, and you know you're doing a vertex cover on 7, is there a vertex cover of 17 vertices? It's obviously in polytime. Just look at all n choose 17 possibilities, and you don't even think to ask, can I do better than that? And the notion that you can do much better than that really surprised me. The first proof came out of the Graf-Minor theorem, so that really surprised me that you could use such complex math for it. Since then, there's much easier proofs, but when I first saw that, I was really surprised, and I've had a hard time. Most people I talk to don't seem that surprised by it, and I can't tell if maybe I don't know algorithms that well, or I'm too old, or whatever, but it seems to not really have gotten people as surprised as I was. But hey, it's my list, it went on.
That's the advantage of writing the weblog.
Indeed. Although I assume that theorem did not surprise you particularly?
I think it's as you said it, I never thought about it. And if you don't think about a problem, then you don't get that surprised about it.
That's true. Also, I had the advantage of, I heard about it very early on, earlier than most people. I actually bumped into Mike Fellows at a Combinatorics conference back in, probably 87, something like that, and heard about it. So I was young, I was impressionable, it was a small talk, I was there. You know, it's also timing. Because you pointed out how surprised you are depends on when you're in grad school, pretty much.
Right, and what areas you study, what problems you've looked at.
And also what you've sort of assimilated into, sort of, quote, what is, quote, obvious, unquote. Actually, looking over the comments I got on that one, that one actually was pretty good. The comments were mostly polite and mostly pointing out things I missed, which is fine, or pointing out other things about surprisingness. So I was pretty happy with that. Yeah, someone, I left out Razbarov's fleek problem, which it was surprising, I think.
Oh, that was definitely surprising.
Yeah, so...
The theorem was not surprising.
But
nobody expects to get that polynomial size circuits even with negations, right?
That's true. But actually, that's why when you're making a list like this, you get into problems of what do I mean by surprise. So That's sort of the trouble. It sounds like a fun idea, and it was a kind of fun idea, but then you realize later on, maybe what's more important are important theorems, or maybe you can separate it out. It's surprising that it's true, and frankly, it's provable. That is, one can go on this theme a lot of ways. It's also a nice way to review our history, for that matter, as well.
Well, that's true. I mean, in some sense, any new result is going to be surprising in some, you know, either in technique or in the statement or in just the fact that we could prove it.
If it's not surprising, it's not a good result.
Otherwise, why? Either somebody already did it or wasn't that interesting to begin with.
Also, interesting is another sort of fuzzy word here. Interesting to me, interesting to you. I recently told somebody Van der Woerden's theorem, somebody who's not in theory, and they said, but why would anyone care? But at times, it's hard to communicate why we care about these things. But we do. Anyway, but I was happy with the comments on that. If you will, can we switch to talking about the guest blogging?
Sure.
Okay. To the listeners out there, I recommend that anybody, if Lance asks you to guest blog for a week, definitely do it.
Yes, definitely do it.
What's that?
Everyone should guest blog when I tell them to.
Absolutely. But let me tell you, aside from that, the point is that Tom Wolfe once said, the author, everybody has one good book in them, their own autobiography. Similarly, everybody has five good weblogs in them, at least.
And I know, but
you have that.
Yes, you know, so far I've done three of them. So I'll get to the other two, and the rest, of course, is just...
No, Lance, in fact, that's what I'm amazed at, is that I did these five, I was happy with them, we'll go into the details later, but I'm kind of amazed you come up with something new every day.
Well, not quite every day.
Well, that's true. Well, and it's not quite new either. But
what I do is I keep a long list, and you know, when I'm running out of a topic, I pull something off the list.
Yeah. Actually, the first post was on Luddites, and the clever thing there was I wasn't quite sure I'd get everything to work first time out. So if it was on Luddites and like the font was wrong or something strange happened, I'd have a built-in excuse. Hey, it was on being a Luddite, so it's okay if you mess up. And in fact, the font was too small.
Yeah, well, in fact, how we do this? You used like the pre command on the HTML,
yeah,
right?
I just used the pre command.
Because you had no idea how to actually format any HTML in any reasonable way.
I don't know HTML. There you go.
There you are, Mr. Luddite himself.
But I did actually remember how to do just font increases for the following week. But I was happy with that. I was happy with the comment. I was happy with the post and with the response. And the next day was actually making up problem sets. So it's sort of weird, just, you know, advice on making up homeworks. I thought it was okay, almost no comments whatsoever. I think that provocative, and just some advice, but here's the problem for the, also for Lance's readers as well. I think I speak for Lance as well. We want comments. I mean, if you get no comments on a posting, was it good? Was it bad? Was it boring? Was it helpful? Let us know, hey.
Yeah, well, to some extent, don't just comment, just comments. I mean,
well, that's true. I mean, If you tune in and no one's commented, make a comment.
But you're right. It's comments are the only real way I know people are actually listening.
Yeah. Okay, although, that's not true. Don't you know you have 12,000 readers a week, a month?
Yeah, no, you're sure I have hit counts.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's not the same, right? If someone comments, then you know they've actually read the post.
Yeah. Like, for example, I gave advice on making up problem sets and maybe someone making up problems for research. And frankly, I think it's good advice, but I don't know. The next post actually was, I pointed out a theorem I thought should be better known. Here's the weird thing about it. The theorem was, if L is any set whatsoever, the set of all subsequences of L is regular, which I think it's not well known, it should be better known, I think, which is why I posted it. But my point was more, hey, readers, what theorem do you think should be better known if not well known? I thought I would get a whole bunch of people saying, this or that theorem should be better known than it is.
You know, I find that never works. I never do that. I never say, you know, give me your opinion.
Why does that work?
I don't know why. I think people are just unwilling to answer those kinds of questions.
Well,
I find the best way to get comments is to state something with such conviction that people are commenting just to argue with you or purposely leave something out.
Ah.
And if people will mention it. It's oddly enough, if you didn't mention that you wanted people to give you their own opinions, they probably would have.
See, it's hard to say, but your recent posting on the stock conference, of course, got a lot of opinions. You didn't say anything provocative, just that people care about it deeply.
Yeah, I think in this particular case, they're just, I think it was in Jeff Erickson mentioned it was probably the largest submissions ever, one of the lowest acceptance rates, so there were just a lot of, probably a lot of really good papers that didn't get in, and people were showing their frustration.
That's true, absolutely fair. Although the posts got, after a while, a bit repetitive. But anyway, so yeah, I wanted people to comment on, I would think people would want to actually comment on theorems they think are important that aren't more out there. But no, I think Scott Aronson emailed too. I think I might have got one more. That was it, though. I mean, that's about it. Scott's were fine, but it's I kind of wanted more in general. But okay, tip for future guest bloggers, if you think, you know, hey, everybody, send in your comments on so-and-so, it's not going to work.
Yeah, don't beg for comments. That's probably
well, I didn't think of begging. I don't just, you know,
don't beg for comments. You know, you're
your
points, make them strong, and let people say what they mean.
That's true. I think I have here, I invite you to post the comments.
Yeah, see, you're begging.
Okay. Yeah, that just looks bad.
Please, comment, please, please. Is anyone out there? $5 to anyone to comment.
If you post a weblog about a tree falling in a forest and nobody reads it, I did a comment on philosophy of science, and actually I got a very thoughtful comment back on it. By the time I got back to it, so looking back at it, the day was over, so I didn't really bother responding to it. Anyway, but I am was that curious about that. I still maintain it's a good project to figure out how much external forces influence what we do. The trouble is, while it's a good project, I kind of think you would end up not really getting any answers in the end.
I think the first comment sent it all.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
Money.
That was fine.
What is the number one pusher of science? Money.
What's that?
People follow the money.
Indeed. Okay. But was that always true?
Honestly, yeah.
Oh, hmm.
I'd right. say even back in the Renaissance, right? People, they had to pick their sciences that got them their benefactors.
And they would dedicate a book to the prince that actually funded the research.
Something like that.
Yes, I mean, now we just acknowledge the NSF grants. Actually, that certainly was true. For example, would quantum computing have been this big if it wasn't for the funding?
Doubtful.
Doubtful?
I mean,
again, that's the question I asked.
I mean, I don't want to be fair. So many people will have thought about it. And other people will do it anyway, no matter what the topic is. But certainly in an area like quantum computing, I think you see a lot of people in the area because that's where the money is.
Yeah. But that's just it, though. I'd want to know, okay, you said correctly but somewhat simplistically, the key is follow the money. And that's probably about right. But I'd be more curious to sort of quantify that. Is it how much of an influence is funding on things? What do people study if funding is not an issue? Why? How much is there such a thing as the correct approach to a problem? And does the truth win out in the end? These are all good questions, which I wish I had time for.
No, if only you got a grant to fund that study. You know,
I think getting a grant in philosophy of science is probably even less like than getting a grant in, say, computer complexity, right. Current field.
That reminds me. One guaranteed way to get lots of comments: go quote George Bush.
Yes, but the thing is, I don't really want hate mail.
Yeah,
that was amazing. Actually, I think how I found your post somewhat non-controversial. You merely stated what he said. Although, seriously, some of the comments you got were thoughtful and reasonable and skeptical, which I think is good.
No, and it's reasonable to be skeptical, particularly with this president. I'll admit.
Yes, the thing is, honest disagreements are fine. But questioning that it's a bad thing to quote the president is just weird.
He is our president, like it or not.
I agree.
And what he says about science is important to science.
Oh, boy, one thing that might actually cut down on idiot comments is to not allow them to be anonymous.
No. I mean, first of all, we got a lot of really good anonymous comments.
Oh, fair enough, yeah.
And I prefer people sign their comments, but I prefer that if people feel more comfortable posting anonymously than not posting at all, you know, much prefer they just post anonymously.
That's true. Like, here I am saying I want more comments and also saying they shouldn't be anonymous. Those two probably don't both cohere.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You really want to open it up. Let people say what they want to say. But don't be afraid. I think people are afraid, you know, if they express their opinion and with their real names, people might look down on them. But you never see that. I think people always look up to people who express their opinions, even if their opinions are not the ones they agree with.
That's true, although with the weblog, the weird thing is, by the next day, no one remembers anymore.
That's another safe thing. You know, whatever I do that really pisses people off, people will just totally forget about it a week later.
Yeah. So it's kind of weird, but the next, sort of, that's the transformation of blogs in general. In fact, that's why it's weird. I may go back to an old blog of yours, say, if I haven't read it for a while, and I have some intelligent comment to contribute, I'm not going to bother. Because it's already old news.
Yeah, but, you know, you'd be surprised how many people look at a lot of my old entries just because they stumble upon them by Google.
Well, you're right. I'd be surprised. My last blogging was actually, it was amazing. I'm not posting the comments on it. Let me tell you a little history, a little background on this. So I was telling a class goal that I'm guest blogging for a week, and that most posts have not been all that controversial. None have been personal, really. And that I was contrasting Scott Aronson's blog. He really puts himself out there. So it's good at times, it's weird at times, it's bad at times. I kind of like that he's out there. Never mind whether it's good or bad, I like that he sort of puts himself out there, and you know who he is from his blog. And so I figured I would just have a few, just a very, very few personal comments in my last blog. The thing about that I don't like Sex and the City or Desperate Housewives, that my father-in-law do, they're hipper than I am. Just, you know, somewhat humorous, maybe somewhat personal. Anyway, gosh, I got flack for that. That was amazing. That got more comments than my philosophy of science post. And my problems post. It was sort of weird to get flack for expressing a certain taste in TV shows.
And that's what people know. People know TV shows. Maybe they don't have great philosophies of science within themselves. They know what TV shows are good, they know what TV shows suck, and
well, but it's
that's what comments are about. But also remember, if people agree with you, don't leave comments.
That's true.
And the number of people comment is a tiny fraction of the number of people look at the weblog. So it's not that comments are a random sample of people reading the weblog. I think
that's true. And in fact, for future guest bloggers, yes. I mean, in fact, you can't really take these things that seriously. If you actually took negative comments seriously, you'd never blog again. Yeah, Lance. I mean, like, Lance, you care about the comments, but you can't possibly really say, oh no, they didn't like it, boo-hoo.
No, I don't take them personally unless they're personally attacking me. But even then, I don't take it personally.
Yeah. Okay. Also, some are just sort of misguided. But anyway, to wrap it up here maybe, yeah, the thing is, I like weblogging. I have a few more weblogs in me, but I think that, and if you asked me to do it again, I would do it again.
You won't start your own weblog.
I don't think I have enough for that. Also,
you'd be surprised. You don't have to do it every day. You do it once a week or so.
However, I should point out one other thing. First off, isn't it a big time sink for you?
Not as much as it seems. I can, if it's not a technical post, I can usually write it up in about 15 minutes. And like I said, I mean the hardest part is actually coming up with ideas, but you know, I just jot them down whenever, you know, they come up in a conversation at lunch or whatever, and I just jot them down and have it ready.
It is true that while I was doing it, like everything I heard in conversation anywhere, I would think, can I
make
a blog? Wouldn't
that make a good weblog entry? Yeah, I do that all the time. Yeah, and then I jot them down. Like I said, I have a huge list.
It's kind of weird. Actually, that's more my problems thing. I come up with problems that way, problem sets for courses. I look around, and whatever's happening, make a problem set out of it. Anyway, yeah, so future posters. So to Lance's future guest posters, certainly, if he asks you, do it. Certainly, don't be scared of negative comments. Don't be that impressed with positive ones either, actually.
You don't flatter yourself.
Yeah, don't flatter yourself. And also, I think that talk about what you know, I'm thinking, is probably a good idea. I'm not sure I did that, but it's a good idea.
Yeah, it's more useful to talk about what you know. And you want my suggestions. Don't be wishy-washy. State your opinion. Make it, you know, maybe even state it a little stronger than you normally would mean it, because people don't want to see you wish-wash all over the place. People want to see you with strong opinions. You know, state opinions as facts, whether they're opinions, and, you know, let's let people respond if they want to.
Actually, good point. State opinions as facts. If it's good enough for George Bush, good enough for us.
Yeah, also, I want to make sense. I mean, don't have to wait for me to ask you. If you have some burning thing you want to talk about and you want to write up a guest post on my weblog, just drop me an email. I do that quite often. People just drop me interesting posts, like Kamal James' post a couple weeks ago.
Actually, Lance, when you first told me that, I kind of thought that would make you flood with requests, but apparently people just don't want to do it that much.
if it becomes, you know, if I get overloaded with requests, then I'll have to start saying no. But
that's true, but that is not the problem.
Generally doesn't happen. And one thing I don't want to do is just post announcements, you know. Here's this conference, here's this. Yeah, I don't want to do that. But if you have something, you know, really interesting to say, particularly some viewpoint about some aspect of academics or theoretical computer science you want to make, those are the kinds of things I really like to be happy to guest post for you. And it saves me a day of writing.
How come more folks don't take up on that?
Same reason everyone does anonymous comments. You know, people are not always excited about putting themselves out there. All right, we should probably wrap it up. So thanks, Bill, for another interesting podcast.
Well, let's wait till the comments come in.
Wait to see the comments, right?
Yeah.
All right, until next time. In a complex world, remember to keep it simple.